WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
In a season where SU's top target was out for the season in week two, its quarterback tearing its shoulder in October, and Dino Babers getting fired in November, South Florida takes down Syracuse in the Boca Raton Bowl 45-0.
Copeland, left wing three! It's good! Quadir Copeland wins the game for Syracuse!
Gary Gate, you are the king of the Queen City. 14-13, number 9 Syracuse upsets number 2 Johns Hopkins, and that's the first top 5 win of the Gary Gate era.
Hearing from a host of guests.
We now have the pleasure of being joined by Tom Luganville, college football analyst and director of scouting for ESPN.
We have the pleasure of being joined by our most esteemed guest, the number one guest on the Ostrom Avenue podcast in terms of total number of appearances, Brent Axe of Syracuse.com.
And providing all the hot takes.
I still think that Syracuse will make Final Four weekend for men's lacrosse.
I've seen enough. Chris Bell and Justin Taylor cannot play together successfully.
My favorite content here on the Hill is when Felicia Leggett Jack and Ian McIntyre interact on Twitter.
That is
legendary.
That might be your best take of all time.
It's the Ostrom Avenue podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome into another edition of the Ostrom Avenue podcast here on WAER. As always, I'm Jordan Leonard, joined alongside AJ Myers. And AJ, we revived our weather conversation last week.
Yeah.
We pushed this microphone out of the way and my camera shot. The weather this week, it definitely got a lot cooler, more fall weather, which I'm liking. I'm wearing a sweatshirt today, but the rain has been nonstop all week. I don't know if I like that.
No, yeah. We're recording on Thursday and it's rained, I think, Tuesday, Wednesday, and now Thursday again, it's raining. So it's real Syracuse weather now. I almost feel like we're done with those hot days, which I'm not totally, you know, upset about, but the Syracuse rain I did not miss. Because when it rains here, it just rains like all day. It's almost like it's like all Seattle day. Or like England. Like it doesn't stop, like just like drizzling.
It never stops. Tuesday morning, sorry for cutting you off there. Tuesday morning, the weather was great. I don't think it rained Tuesday morning. It started raining Tuesday afternoon. Yeah. It was like mid-60s, a little cloudy, so a little cooler. It was awesome Tuesday morning. As you can see, if you're watching this on YouTube, I'm not at home in my setup. We benefited from a class cancellation, so the recording of the pod got moved up earlier on Thursday. You gotta love that, getting a class canceled during the week. There's nothing better than getting the class canceled, not having to go sit in communications law for an entire hour and 20 minutes.
I compare class being canceled in college is like a snow day, like when you're in elementary school or middle school or whatever. It's kind of the same feeling.
Absolutely. Speaking of cancellation, Syracuse undefeated record got canceled last Friday against Syracuse. Great transition right there by me. 26-24, Stanford came all the way from California to the Dome, took down Syracuse, gave SU its first loss in the Fran Brown era. And AJ, I'll toss it over to you first, but it was an interesting slash ugly game to watch from the Dome for myself.
Yeah, I mean, we had the pleasure of watching this one together in the media row. And, you know, I turned over to you when the game, it was late fourth quarter, and you're like, they're going to walk this off on a field goal and look what they did. They did just that. And you kind of saw that coming. Syracuse could never really get into third gear. You know, Kyle McCord, he looked good at times. He wasn't great. I don't think those interceptions are all his fault. But he never found Ronde Gadsden late in the games. Laquan Allen didn't get going. That whole rushing game just never got going. And the offense just could never get in that tempo that we saw it against Georgia Tech and Ohio. And that's what cost him. And Stanford, give credit to them. They did really well on offense. And you called it. They walked it off on that field goal.
Yeah, it was an interesting game. Kyle McCord, if you look at the stats, didn't have a horrible game. He had over 330 passing yards, completed about 60-ish percent of his passes. He had those two interceptions, well, one of which I don't think was on him. It was more of a communication error with him and Vallari that happened to be the pick six. The second one was definitely his fault. It was an underthrown wheel route to the sideline, which he actually had Laquan Allen open in the flat on that play. But either way, he underthrew the wheel route. It was just an ugly game to watch on the offensive side. The passing game was solid, but the rushing game was absolutely horrendous. Only 26 net rushing yards on the day, 17 attempts. And this has been a theme. SU is last in the ACC in rush attempts by a good, like, I think it's a margin of 20. They really have not run the ball, which, you know, you have Kyle McCord at quarterback, so you want to throw the ball a little bit more. But you have LaQuinn Allen at running back. And they didn't have Will Nixon on Friday, their backup running back. But LaQuinn Allen is a dynamic all-ACC running back, and they need to get him the ball. Only 8 carries from LaQuinn Allen. That is unacceptable in any game in terms of establishing the run and trying to get your playmakers the ball. LaQuinn Allen is a dynamic guy when you give him the ball in the running game.
Yeah, you said it. Kyle McCord's a great quarterback. He can throw the ball excellently, and Syracuse has a depth of receivers, as we've talked about all season long. But the running game, you could say, is the most important part of this offense and maybe the best aspect of the offense, because it was effective last year with solely LaQuinn Allen. Now they have Will Nixon, who, of course, missed the game with an injury. Hopefully he gets back, but they also have Yaseen Willis, who's looked good in red zone situations. So they have a good depth of running back, and you said, I mean, LaQuinn Allen has to get the ball more. He's that good, and he's so much better than just getting 8 carries a game. He has to get it more. And if they get the running game going, then it allows the passing game to just have more freedom too.
Yeah, you just mentioned it. The play action game relies on getting the running game set up. And you don't have to establish the run at first. Like, there are 2 ways you can do it. You can establish the run and then use the play action in the passing game, or you can establish the pass, get everyone out of the box, and then get to the running game and then play action. So there's 2 ways you can do it, but you got to do it one of the 2 ways. You got to be a balanced offense. Fran Brown has talked about it. He mentioned it in his post-game presser about being multidimensional on offense. And that really is what hurt him in this game, because Stanford, they didn't have to stack the box. They could play coverage because Syracuse was getting dominated by the Stanford defensive line, and they weren't committing to the run at all. You look at in the first half, they had negative rushing yards if you factor in the Kyle McCord sacks. And that's just not a recipe to win a game. The defense did a great job. Everyone's going to remember that last drive where I called it. They were going to kick a game-winning field goal. It was looking a little dicey there on the 4th and 9 that if they got that stop, my prediction would have been wrong. But everyone's going to look at the defense not getting that last stop. The only reason Syracuse was in the game was the defense getting stops against that Stanford offense. They gave up a touchdown, I think it was on the 2nd drive of the game. And after that, it was field goals, interceptions, or punts. It was nothing. They were pretty dominant. They may have given up yards, but they held them to 3 points. And these SCU offense just never got it going.
No, if the offense would have got going and that running game would have got going, I don't think the Stanford really would have been in the game, because Stanford's offense was really one player. It was their quarterback who was good, but it was Alec Iomaner. I mean, he's a really good receiver, and he had a great game. And SU, you know, they couldn't really defend him that well, but he made some spectacular catches throughout the game. And it's not, I don't think you can criticize SU's defense for how they defended him. Maybe, of course, you know, that last
play. Maybe except that last play.
Yeah, except that last play, you could have put a double team on him, sure. But he made some really good catches throughout the game. And even after the game, Fran Brown didn't walk around it. He said the running game just didn't get going. And it's that simple. It just never got going. And for Syracuse, you want to talk about a good way to rebound off a tough loss, is having Holy Cross this weekend, which should be an easy and simple win.
Holy Cross, an FCS school, they got Syracuse this weekend. We'll talk about that in a quick second. I was actually very impressed, too, with the transition on defense in terms of Justin Barron sliding down to that Mike linebacker position, Derek McDonald sliding out to the weak side linebacker, and then Devin Grant kind of taking that star position where Justin Barron was. I thought that transition worked well. If you look at what Justin Barron has done, he's a very versatile guy. He averages 7.5 tackles per game. He leads the team in tackles, and he's played almost like 4 different positions throughout the first couple of weeks, whether it's star, safety, linebacker, multiple different linebacker spots. I think he's been, you know, the guy that doesn't get enough credit on the SU defense, especially when Marlo Wax goes down in week 1, and he's that veteran leader who's been with Syracuse for a while. Justin Barron has done a really good job at taking his place, not even playing the position that he normally does.
Yeah, and I wouldn't expect anything else from Justin Barron. He's such an experienced guy. He's such a leader, too, on that defense. You can see he's always barking out instructions on that back line for Syracuse, and he's going to be such a critical part in Marlo Wax's absence as ACC play starts and these games get even more tougher. For him to be on that Syracuse defense and be a leader, I think Fran Brown has complete trust in everything that he does, and you see that on the field.
Yeah, one more thing to hit on from the Stanford game before we get to Holy Cross and a couple other things we got on the docket today. Aronde Gadsden, 2 catches, 12 yards, AJ. You mentioned it a little bit earlier. I guess I'll pose a question to you. What is the fix for trying to get Aronde Gadsden the ball, even when teams are, you know, double-teaming him or, you know, he's that number one person on the scouting report?
I think it's getting him the ball early, but also getting him the ball in simpler routes. I think they're always looking for Rondé Gannston with a deep ball or in the red zone and getting him in the end zone, which is great. I understand that. He is that kind of tight end where he should be scoring touchdowns, two or three a game. Absolutely. But throw him a simple screen pass or just get him a simple five-yard gain. Just get him the ball early. That gets him involved in the offense. And I think defenses will just be more worried about him, where it almost comes as natural that he's going to get the ball and he'll make those good catches. But just getting the ball earlier and just simple routes to give him the ball. Because if Rondé Gadsden's involved and so is LaQuint Allen, I think Syracuse is going to have a great chance of winning. It's just about getting their two best offensive weapons outside of the quarterback involved.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said there. Also, I'll throw in the fact that whenever the team, whenever, like, say, Kyle McCord diagnoses that the team is playing zone on defense on that particular play, you almost have to try to force feed Gadsden the ball. Not like try to force it where you throw an interception, but Gadsden is almost unguardable in a zone coverage because of how big he is and how he sees the game. He sits down in those zones. I mean, you go back to 2 years ago, basically most of his catches were against zone coverage until teams just started playing man coverage the entire game because Garrett Schrader couldn't throw to man coverage. But, you know, anytime the other team is playing zone, get Rondé Gadsden the ball, use his size, throw back shoulders, throw, you know, in between guys so he can kind of get down and get like a 10-yard gain and maybe no yards after the catch. Just getting him the ball as much as you can against zone coverage because, you know, he's a mismatch in man, but, you know, when you have two guys on you, it's a little bit harder. If they can't put two guys on you on every specific play in a zone coverage, try to get him the ball when you face those kind of coverages. They shouldn't have a problem getting the ball this weekend. Holy Cross, an FCS school, they've been good in the past. Bob Chesney now leaves, though, heads over to JMU, who had a ginormous win against UNC. 70 points against an ACC opponent. I mean, Mac Brown's swimming a little bit there down in Chapel Hill. But either way, Syracuse, you know, should have a pretty easy game this weekend. I guess, what are you looking for in Syracuse going into the Holy Cross game? Obviously, you know, I don't want to say they're going to win, but, you know, we'd have a big problem if they didn't win. But what are you looking for in terms of them rebounding off their first loss in the Fran Brown era?
Yeah, I think when you play these kind of games against lesser opponents like Holy Cross is, it's not about winning. It's about, you know, the second strings coming in the second half and how early Kyle McCord gets pulled from this game. But I'm just looking for a quick start, you know, getting a score right away, 21-0 by the end of the first quarter, something like that. And getting that offense involved, getting Rondé Gadsden the ball, LaQuint Allen running the ball. You know, McCord doesn't need to throw the ball in every possession in this game. Have that running game really run the game. And who's going to be those reserves that come in and impress? My biggest thing is who's going to be the quarterback that comes in. Again, I'm assuming that it's a blowout third, fourth quarter. Yeah. Is it going to be Carlos Del Wilson, or will we see Michael Johnson? We haven't seen him yet. So I think it'll be interesting to see who Fran Brown leans on to replace Kyle McCord when it becomes a blowout.
I agree. I think the backups are going to be the most interesting part to this game. Who comes in at quarterback? Who are the wide receivers that maybe can get into a rhythm to where they can help more on their limited amount of snaps when they're playing with the first team? Yasin Willis, I think, could be a big factor in terms of getting him into a rhythm. He hasn't gotten, you know, consistent carries, rightfully so, being a freshman behind LaQuint Allen. Maybe he can get into a rhythm where when he's inserted into a game for a snap, he can kind of, you know, have a little bit more of an impact. I'm looking at Justice Ross Simmons, though. You know, he is a first-string guy, but last week was his first game of the season. This, I think, is a week where, you know, you want to spread the ball around, play your normal offense, but trying to get Justice Ross Simmons into a rhythm going down, you know, against Holy Cross, an easier opponent, so he can be better and more connected with Kyle McCord going against the opponents going forward and getting into conference play, I think is a huge must if you're Syracuse because, you know, Deed Haynes probably won't play this week because of the personal issues that he's dealing with his family. But you need to have as many targets as you can on that wide receiver core. Jackson Meeks has shown that he can step up, try to get Justice Ross Simmons to step up a little bit, and that just even deepens an already deep wide receiver room.
And you mentioned Yasin Willis. I'm going to go back to when Syracuse played Wagner 2 years ago. They won that game 59-0. LaQuint Allen, that's when he was behind Sean Tucker, had four carries in that game for over 100 yards and a touchdown. I remember when I was watching that game, I was like, oh, okay, like this LaQuint Allen guy, he is the real deal. He can be the running back of the future. I think it'll be interesting to see if we see something similar with Lasean Willis, maybe in the second half when he does get a bulk of the carries.
Yeah, him and even maybe Jaden Hart, who's that fourth running back who's also a freshman. This is a great game for those guys to kind of get some experience. So then when they're, if they're thrust into action against the NC State, Virginia Tech, that it's not the first time they're touching the field and they kind of get those jitters out of the way and get into a little bit of a rhythm. Speaking of UNLV, that's the next opponent on Syracuse's schedule after Holy Cross. It's a big game in Vegas, Friday Night Lights, 9 p.m. Eastern kickoff. AJ, there's been some interesting news out of UNLV in the last 2 days. Matthew Sluka, their starting quarterback who actually transferred from Holy Cross, has been balling out for the first couple of games. The Rebels are 3-0. They have become sort of favorites to win the Mountain West with Boise State, potentially get that group of five conference champions slot in the college football playoff. But was it Tuesday? I'm pretty sure Matthew Sluka announced that he was leaving the team and entering the transfer portal and it's still up for debate in terms of the confirmation of all these details, but it seems like that he was verbally promised NIL money up to $100,000 that he has not gotten. And he wanted to preserve his red shirt so he can continue to play college football for at least one more year. Just a crazy situation for a 3-0 team to lose their quarterback that led them to that because of NIL. It's the first time we've seen this. I guess just, what are your first kind of like raw thoughts based on what you saw on Tuesday?
Yeah, when I first read it, I had to read it again. I'm like, what? Like, is there an injury or
something?
So
what's crazy is because of the Pacific Coast time, it happened after I had fallen asleep. So I woke up to all of the tweets.
Yes, so did I. Yeah, same thing. Yeah, I woke up and I was like, oh, he had to get hurt or something. No, it's a money dispute. And really, welcome to college athletics in 2024. I think this may not be the first time we see something like this when it's I'm not saying UNLV is a small school, but not a big three, big three conference school or whatever you want to define those big schools as when, they get a talented quarterback and they say, we have NIL money to provide you. But, whether it's he was guaranteed certain money, if that was verbally or on paper, that's up for debate still. And there's no concrete, confirmation of what all that was. But for UNLV, it's awful. I couldn't imagine you losing your starting quarterback, a player who's looked really well. You're off to a fantastic start. You're exceeding expectations. I don't think the team really expected to be 3-0 and at this point and, being favorites to win their conference. And now they have to go to the backup quarterback and they'll have a difficult game on Friday against Syracuse. So it's quite a whirlwind for what's happened. And it's really just what college athletics has become in 2024.
Yeah, I look at it as it's kind of sad. I'm not going to comment on the specifics because I don't know which side is telling the truth in terms of that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the legal standing in terms of is a verbal contract in that state, kind of how that works. But I will say, it's kind of sad to where we have gotten in terms of the money outweighs the love of the game. And I understand Matthew Sluka, wanting to get his money, 100K on the table, you'd be dumb if you don't want to get your 100K, especially when you're probably not going to the NFL and making money that way. But you're 3-0. Your team has a chance to go to the college football playoff. How much better can that get?
Yeah.
And the fact that you're leaving your team, who's going to want to play for you now? Even if you play another year, wherever you might play it.
Yeah.
If I'm a guy in that team, that tells me that you only are focusing on the money. It's not about the game. It's not about the team. It's about how much money I'm getting.
Yeah,
it's just sad. It's a sad state for college football and college athletics in general. And I'm not saying NIL isn't good. NIL is great for these college athletes. They're getting cut in on what all these schools have reaped the benefits for the last 40 plus years, even more than that. But it's just sad that no longer are players just going for the love of the game. They're going for the money and it's become a business and how much of a. It's a sad state of affairs, in my opinion, for college football. And this is just the latest example. And this will probably prove to be a momentum changer in terms of NIL. What's a verbal agreement? How does the verbal agreement get, doled out kind of thing? So it'll be interesting to continue to follow the situation up to the game next Friday. And it definitely changes the matchup. That's an understatement. They're going to their backup quarterback. I forget his name off the top of my head, but I know he's a Campbell transfer. But, we'll see how he compares this weekend when they play San Diego State.
Fresno State this weekend.
Fresno State.
Yeah.
You get a lot of different state schools in the Mountain West over there. Fresno State, Colorado State, Boise State.
Yeah, actually, after Syracuse, UNLV plays Utah State, Oregon State, and Boise State.
That's my point right there. Every single one of these schools has a state in the end of it. You end up losing track of it. But either way, that's the update on Matthew Slucco. We're going to try to talk to a UNLV reporter before the game on Friday next week for the Ocean Avenue podcast, get more insight on the team generally, and maybe try to get to the bottom of what happened between the quarterback and the university's NIL collective. But big news on Syracuse's campus. You know, everyone's saying it's a football school. It's a basketball school, buddy. I mean, just look at the students and how they left at halftime of a Friday night game. Yeah. That was a one possession game. Basketball is 6 weeks away, and we got the schedules this Tuesday. We already knew the non-con, so we can kind of breeze through that. You got big games in the non-conference schedule. Texas, you're playing Texas in the Legends Classic in Brooklyn. You got a TBD of St. Joe's or Texas Tech as well. Tennessee's that SEC-ACC challenge. On Monday, we found out this is the men's basketball schedule, by the way. I should have prefaced that a little bit. But they got their ACC opener at Notre Dame in early December. And then the full ACC schedule came out on Tuesday. And basically, my initial thoughts on this was it's interesting. The Duke game is on a Wednesday. That stinks. Not on a Saturday. Although they do have five Saturday home games in the month of January, February, and early March, which is good in terms of fan attendance and just kind of the atmosphere in those games. And the road trip out west, they play Stanford on a Wednesday, January 29th, and then a Saturday, February 1st game against California. Otherwise than that, what are your big reactions, or what games did you zero in on when looking at the schedule when it came out on Tuesday?
Yeah, when it came out, I was most curious to see, you know, what new teams, ACC teams, would SU be playing, and, you know, where would they make that, you know, West Coast trip? And it is Stanford and Cal. And, you know, obviously I knew those games would be bunched together, and it's just going to be interesting to see Syracuse playing out West. Of course, they did that kind of last year when they went out. I forget where it was. It was North Dakota play Oregon, or was it South?
Yeah, they played North Dakota.
Yeah.
It might have been South Dakota. No, yeah, it was Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Yeah, South Dakota, yeah. So that, you know, they've gone out west, you know, before, but, you know, that's going to be something the team will have to get used to with those teams joining the ACC. But also, and then in terms of, you know, those, the crowd perspective and, you know, what you were saying, I think those home fans will be happy to see Duke's at home and UNC's at home. So those two games, which are going to be difficult games, Syracuse kind of catches a break in a way with both of them being at home. And of course, SU upset UNC last year and the fans stormed the dome and what was probably the highlight of last season. So they'll get a chance at maybe doing something similar this year.
Yeah. When I look at the schedule, there's a couple two-game homestands. There's the two-game road trip out west, but the only other two-game road trip is at the end of the season with Virginia Tech on a Saturday and then SMU on a Tuesday. In terms of travel, Syracuse does not have a particularly hard travel schedule. It's either you have one road game, you're back in the dome, or the West Coast trip, which is a guaranteed kind of bunching road games together, and then one road trip at the end of the season. So I think in terms of travel-wise, they got lucky in terms of the way that worked out. And their bye is a lot earlier this year. Every ACC team has essentially a weekend off at some point during the season. And Syracuse's comes right after that North Carolina game. They have a game on February. Oh, no, it doesn't come after. This is where Cuse.com actually kind of messes up a little bit. They have two games missing within that schedule. Let me bring it up on my notes app. I have it written down in my notes app. They get their bye a lot earlier this year, where they have a kind of like an off week after the Pitt road game on the 18th. They have, I think, 8 days off between at Pitt and home against NC State. So they get the off week last year. They had the off week late in the season in early March. So they get it a little bit earlier this year, which I think will help them kind of balance out that ACC schedule.
And regardless, I think ACC is going to be difficult again. It proved to be difficult last year. I know everyone was kind of undermining the conference, but saw how many teams did well in the tournament. Of course, NC State kind of making that Cinderella run. It's going to be another difficult conference slate, but I think, you know, they get some good games at home. And as you mentioned, that road schedule isn't too brutal. You know, with the West Coast trip, it isn't, you know, two games bunched together. It's nothing crazy. And it's definitely manageable for what is definitely a talented SU roster. It's just whether or not Adrian Autry can put a lot of new pieces together.
Yeah, I will say that too. Other than the Wake Forest game to start the schedule, SU has a pretty easy, if you're going based on it last year, decently easy start to the ACC schedule. FSU, you know, mediocre. Georgia Tech, mediocre. BC, mediocre. Louisville stunk last year. Yep. Notre Dame stunk, which they'll be better this year, but they were still mediocre. Then you play Clemson. Like, your first like six games are, you know, very winnable games, and half of which, four of the six coming at home, which I think will help the younger. It's a younger team and a new team, but at the same time, they're also veteran because the transfers are older. But either way, I think it's going to help this team kind of settle in. Also, the women's schedule came out on Tuesday as well, about an hour before the men's ACC schedule. A couple of ones to note from the non-con for the women's team. They play Maryland again this year. They lost to them early in the non-con last year. They play them in November, November 13th. They go down to Destin, Florida during Thanksgiving week to play Missouri, and then the winner or loser of Creighton, Wichita State. Texas A&M, they got on the road in the SEC-ACC Challenge. They take on Notre Dame in their ACC opener, but at home, unlike the men who go on the road. And then just looking at the schedule, once again, they have a little bit tougher. They have a couple two-game road trips that are interesting, one including the West Coast trip. Both teams making a West Coast trip out to Stanford and Cal this season. But just looking at the schedule, they got – a bunch of games at home, they play on Thursdays and Sundays. So a bunch of Sunday games at home. And then I think that hardest stretch is probably that Louisville Boston College road trip Thursday to Sunday. Last year they did that where they went straight from Louisville to Boston College. I could see that potentially happening again this year.
Yeah. It didn't, I think that was a loss against Louisville too, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So that was a difficult stretch. And I think there's that tough stretch, but again, I think it's, you know, another, you know, manageable schedule where there's nothing too difficult right in a row. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that both men's and women's teams are going to be out in the West in California playing Stanford and Cal. Just something new and interesting that, you know, both squads will have to get used to with the ACC expanding. I think it's another, you know, ACC is going to be a tough conference. It was last year and they handled it well. And similar to the men's team, this is a women's team that is talented, but it's just about whether how good FLJ can put new pieces and, you know, some younger pieces together on the floor. But I'm not doubting Felicia Legette-Jack and what she can do and how she can coach, because she's done an excellent job with this team.
All trust in FLJ. They start with two road games to start the ACC schedule once the new year hits, at Georgia Tech and at Florida State. That'll be definitely a fast start for the women's team, being on the road twice. They also play at Virginia Tech, which will be interesting because last year they had them at home. They lost a close home game to VT, who was one of the top seeds in the NCAA tournament. And I think that's the biggest thing with the women's team this year. You know, you look at the roster, it's just a lot of new pieces. So how do they gel early in the season and then especially early in ACC play? Because as you mentioned, ACC women's basketball is one of the best conferences in college women's basketball in the country. So how they gel and how they kind of develop throughout the season will be interesting to keep track of during conference play. We'll continue to have reaction, men's basketball schedule, women's basketball, as it gets closer to the season starting. We'll talk about it on Sports Night this week as well on WAER. That about does it for the Ocean Avenue podcast for this week. We're going to try to get a UNLV guest before the big Friday night matchup in Vegas next Friday. And we'll continue to talk SU sports all semester long. Football, basketball. Shout out to women's volleyball starting 12-0 for the first time since. Do you remember the exact year, AJ?
I don't remember the exact year, but it's just a massive improvement to a team that I think only won one or two games last year.
Yeah, first time in definitely over a decade, I know for sure. So shout out to Syracuse women's volleyball. We'll continue to talk everything Syracuse sports here on the Ocean Avenue podcast every single week. We'll see you next time.